baby.
Stop. Right on.
Brother, there's far too many of you dying.
Hey, good morning, Wisconsin. Yeah, 9 minutes, or excuse me, 6 minutes after 8 o'clock now. On this Thursday morning, it's the 18th day of May. And welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. I'm your guest host today, filling in for Earl. My name is Stu Daniels, a.k.a. Stu Man, the Newsman. And Thursday morning. Man, there's a lot going on today. Thank you for tuning in to your local civic media radio station. If you want to join the conversation today, feel free. 844-967-2789 is the phone number. And before we get into the current events, stuff that's happening today, and there is a lot of it, I want to take a look back in history and see what happened on this day, May 18th, in history. One of the big things, 1980. You remember that, 1980? It was on this date in 1980 that the Mount St. Helens volcano erupted in the state of Washington. The eruption followed a 5.1 magnitude earthquake. And if I remember correctly, there was smoke all across the United States that year after that volcano eruption in Washington. And we're having a similar thing going on now in the United States with wildfire smoke blowing across the U.S. So that was 1980. And in 1970, on this date, actress and comedian Tina Fey was born. Also born on this date in the year 1048, Persian poet and astronomer Omar Khayyam. And on this date in 1946, Mr. October Reggie Jackson was born, one of the greatest home run hitters of all time. Also born today, singer Big Joe Turner, who had some of the earliest rock and roll hits in the early 1950s. He was born on this date in 1911. Other birthdays today, Rick Wakeman of the band Yes, born in 1949. Mark Mothersbaugh of the band Devo, born in 1950. And country singer George Strait, born in 1952. And here are some of the headlines that we're going to try to touch on today. The state of Montana has banned TikTok. Yeah, how are they going to do that, I wonder? The Washington Post is reporting that a federal appeals court is likely to limit access to an abortion pill that has been safely used for over 20 years. A bipartisan group of senators led by Ed Markey and Ted Cruz introduced a bill yesterday that would require automakers to continue putting AM radios in new cars. And after admitting he took classified documents intentionally during a town hall last week, Donald Trump has now lost one of his lead lawyers in the Mar-a-Lago documents case. Conservatives who were freaking out a month ago because Bud Light sent a personalized beer can to a trans social media influencer are now freaking out about Miller Lite because of a two-month-old commercial released during Women's History Month. And the Brewers lost to the Cardinals last night 3-0. They are still in first place, but now only a game ahead of the Pirates. And looking at some Wisconsin news, do you remember? It was in 2010, I believe it was, when when Wisconsin was offered $800 million to build a high-speed rail line between Milwaukee and Madison. Everybody thought that was a great idea, right? There's often a lot of traffic on the highway between Milwaukee and Madison, and that would be a great idea, right, to build a high-speed rail service in between Milwaukee and Madison. And so in 2010, Wisconsin was in line to receive $810 million in federal funding. But as most of us remember, our governor at the time, Scott Walker, decided to send the money back or not accept it. And instead of gaining $800 million to build that high-speed rail service, Wisconsin had to pay nearly $10 million to settle the lawsuit from the company that built the trains. So I want to go over this real quickly here. And this is from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, an article that was posted yesterday. The headline from Molly Beck says, "The state projects passenger rail expansion could draw 250,000 people, new riders, within a decade." And this says, state transportation officials who want to expand Amtrak rail to Wisconsin's population centers of Madison, Green Bay, Waukesha County, and other communities project the move could attract about 250,000 new passengers to the trains within a decade and an additional 1.6 million by the year 2050. And the story goes on and says, the State Department of Transportation this week released a long-term plan for Wisconsin's rail lines that could that includes the department's vision for rail service in Wisconsin over the next three decades, including proposals to extend passenger rail to 11 new communities in Wisconsin that would connect the state's capital and Milwaukee. Now, let me ask you this. If you're upstate, you know, somewhere other than Milwaukee or Madison, how would you feel if you had the opportunity to go somewhere close by to a train station, get on a train that would take you down to Madison or to Milwaukee pretty quickly, efficiently, and comfortably? What do you think of that? I'd like to hear from listeners, 844-967-2789. The story goes on and says, the ideas would likely require buy-in from state lawmakers to fully achieve, but Assembly Speaker Robin Voss already said last year he would not support dedicating state funding to expand passenger rail to Madison. So forget it, according to Robin Voss. A rail line built using federal funding between Milwaukee and Madison was on track to becoming reality about a decade ago until a political firestorm doomed it when former Governor Scott Walker made his opposition to it a centerpiece of his first campaign for governor. Now, a 2021 bipartisan law signed by President Joe Biden has resuscitated the idea as it sets aside $102 billion in federal funding for rail lines across the country, much of it for passenger rail projects. You probably know that Joe Biden used to ride the train to work every day, right? Tom Lynch, director of transportation for the city of Madison, said in December the first phases of a project to connect Madison and Milwaukee would not require state funding. And earlier this year, mayors of Pewaukee and Watertown, who also could see new Amtrak stations on the potential expansion of Amtrak's Hiawatha route, signed a letter to federal rail officials in June backing the idea. One proposed expansion would include Madison and other communities between Dane and Milwaukee counties on a route between Chicago and St. Paul, Minnesota. Another would create rail service to Green Bay from Milwaukee. Representatives Mark Bourne and, or I should say Representative Mark Bourne and Senator, Howard Markline, who oversee the legislature's finance committee, declined Tuesday to comment on the ideas because they had not reviewed them yet. And it says, according to the DOT's rail plan, studies or projects to implement passenger rail service connecting Madison, Watertown, and Waukesha County to Milwaukee, Chicago, and or Minneapolis-St. Paul have been included in state and regional plans for over three decades. The Green Bay area has intercity bus service, but does not have passenger rail. Under the proposal to double the number of Amtrak stations in Wisconsin, DOT projects the stations would be used by passengers 2.7 more times than without the expansion. Okay, you got that? Under the proposal to double the number of Amtrak stations in Wisconsin, DOT projects the stations would be used by passengers 2.7 more times than without the expansion. Expanding the routes would increase all of the current station's activity, except in Columbus, which is the closest Amtrak station to Madison. So under the plan, Columbus could see a 46% drop in activity with a new station in Madison. That makes sense, right? That's according to DOT projections. Other communities' stations would see explosions in activity by connecting more population centers, including Sturtevant, Portage, Wisconsin Dells, and La Crosse, all projected by DOT to experience activity increases ranging from 330% to 538%. And as I was mentioning earlier, Wisconsin abandoned rail expansion in 2010. Wisconsin was in line to receive $810 million in federal funding to build a high-speed rail line from Milwaukee to Madison, plus improvements to the Amtrak Hiawatha line between Milwaukee and Chicago. The plan was initiated by former Democratic Governor Jim Doyle and then abandoned after Scott Walker, a Republican, was elected governor. Walker argued the project was a boondoggle that would cost state taxpayers over the long term. As they pursued the federal funds under Doyle, state officials purchased two 14-car train sets manufactured by the Spanish company Talgo Incorporated, which later was the subject of litigation when Wisconsin pulled out of the rail project, and state taxpayers ended up paying the company nearly $10 million to settle the lawsuit. The route was expected to include stops in Brookfield, Oconomowoc, Watertown, and Madison. After Walker was elected, the federal government redirected the rail money from Wisconsin to other states because of Walker's promise to end the project. Walker said he wanted the money to be directed to Wisconsin's roads instead, but federal authorities shifted it elsewhere in the country instead. And if I remember correctly back then, they couldn't shift it to the roads. That wasn't the way it worked. Anyway, going to take a break. Everybody stick around. This is going to be a quick one. If you want to call in, the number is 844-967-2789. You are tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show. Oh yeah, some Todd Rundgren for you on a Thursday morning. That guy is still out there and still putting on great shows to this day. And you know, one of the things you got to admire about Todd Rundgren, besides the fact that he's a great songwriter, a great musician, a great performer, and a great producer of other artists, is the fact that he will often join projects out on the road that are paying tribute to other bands. Remember, he was in that that Cars thing that they did, I think their last tour. He went out on the road with them, and he's done other things with other artists. You know, it's not like it's all about him. So that's one of the cool things about Todd Rundgren, in addition to all the great hits he's had. If you're not familiar with him, I would encourage you to check him out. I'm sure you'll recognize many of the songs, even if you're not familiar with his name. Speaking to some of the younger people in our audience. In fact, Todd Rundgren goes back, 50 years or so? Anyway, enough about that. Let's get on to what we were talking about just before the break. I was talking about the expansion of rail in Wisconsin, right? Wouldn't that be nice to be able to take a high-speed train from Milwaukee to Madison, or take a train up to Green Bay, or from Green Bay down to Madison? Well, it would be convenient, and it would be a nice way to travel, but the even more important fact that the even more important reason to support rail is to get cars off the road, right? If we had high-speed rail between Milwaukee and Madison, how many fewer vehicles would be on the highway? And how much less pollutants would be going into the air, causing global warming? And what do you do on a daily basis? What have you done to try to change things? If you haven't thought about this before, it may be time to think about it now. This is from the New York Times, and this was posted yesterday. The headline says, heat will likely soar to record levels in the next 5 years, a new analysis says. Global temperatures are likely to soar to record highs over the next 5 years, driven by human-caused warming and a climate pattern known as El Niño. Forecasters at the World Meteorological Organization said on Wednesday. Getting back to that story we were talking about before the break, what if Scott Walker had accepted that $810 million back in 2010 and built the high-speed rail line between Milwaukee and Madison? You know, how many fewer tons of carbon pollution would have been sent out into the air? This story from the New York Times goes on and says the record for Earth's hottest year was set in 2016. There is a 98% chance that at least one of the next 5 years will exceed that, the forecasters said, while the average from 2023 to 2027 will almost certainly be the warmest for a five-year period ever recorded. Quote, this will have far-reaching repercussions for health, food security, water management, and the environment, said Pateri Tallis, the Secretary General of the Meteorological Organization. We need to be prepared, is the end of the quote. And the reason why it matters is because every fraction of a degree brings new risks. Even small increases in warming can exacerbate the dangers from heat waves, wildfires, drought, and other calamities, scientists say. Elevated global temperatures in 2021 helped fuel a heat wave in the Pacific Northwest that shattered local records and killed hundreds of people. The Pacific Northwest in the United States. And it says here, let's see, my phone decided to jump to a different area. Can I get it back? Yes. I left off where it said killed hundreds of people. El Nino conditions can cause further turmoil by shifting global precipitation patterns. The Meteorological Organization said it expected increased summer rainfall over the next 5 years in places like Northern Europe and the Sahel area in sub-Saharan Africa, and reduced rainfall in the Amazon, which is not good, and parts of Australia. The organization reported that there is also a two-thirds chance that one of the next 5 years could be 1.5 degrees Celsius or 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit hotter than the 19th century average. That does not mean that the world will have officially breached the aspirational goal in the Paris Climate Agreement of holding global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. When scientists talk about that temperature goal, they generally mean a longer-term average over, say, two decades in order to root out the influence of natural variability. Many world leaders have insisted on the 1.5-degree limit to keep the risks of climate change to tolerable levels, but nations have delayed so long in making the monumental changes necessary to achieve this goal, such as drastically cutting fossil fuel emissions, that scientists now think the world will probably exceed that threshold around the early 2030s. Global average temperatures have already increased roughly 1.1 degrees Celsius since the 19th century, largely because humans keep burning fossil fuels and pumping heat-trapping gases like carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. What do you think? You have an opinion on that? Feel free to call in. The number is 844-967-2789. Going to take the bottom of the hour break. You are tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show on your local Civic Media radio station. Welcome back, everybody. It's 8:33 now on this Thursday morning. Stu Daniels here filling in for Earl today on the Earl Ingram Show. Thank you for tuning in. If you want to join us on the phone, feel free. The number is 844-967-2789. And if you are familiar with how state government works, you may know about shared revenue in the areas around Wisconsin, cities, send money into the state that they've collected, tax money, and then the state sends money back to the communities so they can get things done, right? That's how it works. Well, if your Speaker of the House is Robin Voss, do you trust him to send money back to Milwaukee, Madison, Green Bay, Racine, La Crosse, the cities in Wisconsin? This is from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel yesterday. The headline says, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says the Republican caucus is done negotiating on local government funding bill. And says Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said yesterday, his caucus was done negotiating on sweeping legislation Republican lawmakers passed Wednesday night aimed at boosting funding for local governments that the Democratic governor said he wanted to continue discussing. Assembly Republicans on Wednesday released revisions to a bill that boosts state funding known as shared revenue and implements policy changes in communities across the state on policing, public health, quarries, that's like rock quarries, and more. The revisions were made just before lawmakers were set to meet on the assembly floor to vote on the legislation. Governor Tony Evers said Wednesday morning he was optimistic about finding a compromise supported by both houses of the legislature, stakeholders, and his office. But by the end of the day, Voss said discussions were over, even as Evers' spokeswoman said the governor was looking forward to continuing them. Quote, "We have negotiated in good faith literally for months. Now it's time to act," Voss told reporters before the floor session. Quote, "Nothing has changed since the governor's statement this morning. The governor hasn't signed off on any amendment, but he looks forward to continuing negotiations with Republican leaders in the weeks ahead," Evers' spokeswoman, Britt Cutterback, said in a statement minutes later. The bill was passed 56-36 with all Democrats opposing and three Republicans siding with them, also opposing the proposal. So evidently, Voss wasn't able to keep his caucus together. GOP representatives Scott Allen of Waukesha, Janelle Branchon of Menominee Falls, and Chuck Wickers of Muskego joined Democrats to vote against the bill. Democrats echoed the governor's desire to keep negotiating its provisions and citing the speed at which the legislation was taken up after being amended. That is, that's kind of puzzling there, right? If they make these changes at the last minute and then hurry up and shuffle it through. So what do you think was in there? The story goes on from the Journal Sentinel and says, bill author Representative Tony Kurtz, a Republican, said the bill was a result of months of negotiations, including a rare meeting of Evers, Voss, and Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu. Quote, to let this opportunity go truly hurts the entire state of Wisconsin, Kurtz said. It's something that has taken decades to get to, end quote. The legislation could change further once the state Senate takes it up. LeMahieu has questioned the wisdom of the assembly's proposal's requirement that new Milwaukee and Milwaukee County sales taxes be implemented only if approved by voters. He did not say Wednesday whether he supports the assembly's approach. So you get that? That's one of the revisions in that assembly bill. They want to require Milwaukee and Milwaukee County, if they decide they want new sales taxes to be implemented, it has to be approved by voters. A story from the Journal Sentinel goes on and says the bill would allow the city to levy a sales tax and the county to add to its current sales tax to address pension challenges and public safety services if approved by voters, and would move their new employees to the state pension system. The proposal would also boost supplemental aid for counties, towns, villages, and cities to use for specific public safety, public works, and transportation purposes. Hours before the assembly met Wednesday, Evers, a Democrat, said he was optimistic and hopeful about the ability to find compromise with the Republican-controlled state legislature. The message stood in contrast to his previous threat to veto the legislation over what he said was a need for more local government funding and his concerns about the bill's restrictions on decision-making by local governments. And that's kind of interesting, too, because you often hear Republicans talking about how they want local control, and they feel the local governments should be making decisions, not state or federal governments, send it back to the local level. And yet, it doesn't look like that's the case in these revisions that we're talking about. So here's a quote for you. It says, today we are in a much better place than we were just 2 weeks ago. All parties have been willing to set differences aside. All parties have worked to operate in good faith, and all parties have come to the table committed to finding common ground. And for that, I am very grateful, he said in a statement. Robin Voss. I believe that's who that quote is from. The funding proposal comes in response to a push for increased revenue from municipalities and counties around the state that argue the state's current funding structure is making it increasingly difficult to provide services to residents. The bill includes a litany of proposed policy changes in addition to increased funding through shared revenue, money the state returns to local governments. The referendum requirement, meaning that they would have to go before the voters, has been among the most hotly debated elements of the bill because both Milwaukee and Milwaukee County are depending on the revenue that would be generated by the new taxes to avert significant budget cuts. The city in particular is facing a steep fiscal cliff in 2025 without additional revenue options from the state. At that point, city officials expect huge cuts to services, such as police officers, firefighters, libraries, and more. Is that what we want for the biggest city in our state, the city that is the engine of the economy of our state? That doesn't sound right. The story goes on and says, Milwaukee and Milwaukee County residents would feel the pain of those cuts, but so too would Southeast Wisconsin and the state more broadly, locals argue. LeMahieu said on a different radio station that he did not think the requirement that voters approve the new sales taxes for Milwaukee and Milwaukee County is the best way forward because the referendums could fail, a concern that Milwaukee leaders have also voiced. So that's a Republican talking. A spokesman for LeMahieu did not respond to questions from the Journal Sentinel about whether Senate Republicans approve of the revised bill. A spokesman for Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson declined to comment. A spokesman for Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley said the county appreciated Voss's willingness to continue engaging on providing a solution, but that a unanimous vote on issues of this magnitude has not occurred in recent memory. As written, the legislation would allow the city of Milwaukee to levy a 2% sales tax, while Milwaukee County could add a 0.375% sales tax on top of its current 0.5% tax, if voters approve. And at those rates, Milwaukee County's sales tax collections could be expected to increase by about $72.6 million annually, assuming 5% growth for 2023, 2% growth for 2024, and a January 1st, 2024 effective date, according to a fiscal estimate prepared by the State Department of Revenue. With a 2% sales tax in the city of Milwaukee and assuming the city's share of the county sales tax base is 50%, sales tax collections would be about $193.6 million starting in 2024, the report states. If both the city and county sales taxes were implemented, taxable goods purchased in the city would be subject to both sales taxes. The legislation would make a series of changes to law enforcement in Wisconsin, particularly in Milwaukee and in Milwaukee public schools. Assembly Republicans retained language requiring Milwaukee public schools officials to hire 25 new law enforcement officers to be stationed on school grounds, which is opposed by school board officials. So it sounds like Voss and the Assembly Republicans are forcing these law enforcement officers to be stationed on the school grounds, even though the school board officials don't want the cops. And there's just a little bit more here. It says the revised bill also includes language that requires the new school officers to complete 40 hours of training sponsored by the National Association of School Resource Officers. Voss told reporters Wednesday the training requirement was a request from Evers, a former state superintendent and public school educator. Wisconsin communities spent $2.81 billion in 2021 and $2.73 billion in 2020 on law enforcement, fire and emergency medical services, and the State Department of Revenue estimate states. Okay. So that's what's going on with the funding for local communities in the state. That bill now going before the Senate, and we'll see if they make any changes to it. Let's see. We only have another couple minutes before our next break, but I want to get to the story from Rolling Stone talking about if Trump plans to go back to the White House, who do you think he's going to take with him? Now, the headline here from Rolling Stone says, they helped Trump plan a coup. He wants them back for a second term. Michael Flynn and Jeffrey Clark were leading figures in Donald Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Of course, he wants them at his side if he retakes the White House. Jeffrey Clark, Michael Flynn, leading figures in Donald Trump's efforts to carry out a coup d'etat in 2020 and 2021. The result was mob violence, deaths at the Capitol in Washington, D.C., an array of criminal investigations and lawsuits, and what one former senior Trump aide went on the record to call, quote, the worst day for the Republican Party since Lincoln's assassination, end quote. In any other era, scandals like that would be enough to send those men off into immediate political retirement. But this isn't one of those eras. Trump is now the clear frontrunner in the 2024 Republican primary and remains the leader of the GOP. And he's been telling those close to him how much he wants both of those fellow coup plotters officially at his side in a potential second term in office. The former president has privately noted on several occasions over the past several months how he's seriously considering names like Flynn and Clark for high-level positions in a potential second White House term. That's according to two sources with direct knowledge of the matter, as well as another person briefed on it. The two worked hard to overturn the election with Flynn lobbying the president to institute martial law. And then President Trump hoping to fire the acting attorney general, Jeffrey Rosen, and swap in the more agreeable Clark, Jeffrey Clark. So I'm going to take a break. Stick around. This is a quick one. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show.
Meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 46 degrees. Check out the
devil. Get past the people, get past the hitman. Get on down now. I want to get on the good foot. Good foot. I got to get on the good foot. Going down to the crib and let all hang out. I wear so.
Oh, yeah, now we're getting somewhere. Welcome back, everybody. You are tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show on your local civic media radio station. On this Thursday morning, I'm Stu Daniels filling in for Earl today. He will be back on Monday. And just before the break, we were talking about this article from Rolling Stone where evidently former President Donald Trump is saying he'd like to take Michael Flynn and Jeffrey Clark with him when he gets back in the White House. And I'll continue this just a little bit more. It says, in at least one of these conversations, Trump was self-aware enough to say that any senior role for Flynn would probably have to be a non-Senate confirmed appointment. One of the sources with direct knowledge tells Rolling Stone, Flynn's comments calling for martial law in the wake of the election prompted some Republicans like Senator Mitt Romney to criticize him, potentially leaving any Senate confirmable position effectively out of reach for the retired Army general. And just think about that. What would that have been like if after the election, when Donald Trump lost, that he had declared martial law in the streets of the United States? You know, that would have been a who knows what would have happened. I don't think I want to think about it, but it's a scary proposition. There's a quote here. It says, Trump has said he believes they are both strong candidates for senior positions. He's mentioned that and some other names a couple of times that I know of. We'll see if it happens. The other person with direct knowledge recalls, quote, President Trump calls General Flynn a hero all the time. Why wouldn't he want a hero working for him? There are, of course, reasons why people not named Donald Trump wouldn't want either of these men working for the leader of the GOP ever again. Quote, bringing these two back into government in high-level positions would be tantamount to a declaration of authoritarian principles by a presidential administration. To even consider it would be disgraceful and anti-American, says Walter Schaub, a senior ethics fellow at the Project on Government Oversight and the former director of the Office of Government Ethics. In a statement to Rolling Stone, Trump campaign spokesman Stephen Chung wrote that, quote, President Trump is running to drain the swamp and bring prosperity back to America. That's why he's dominating in the polls, both in the primary and general elections, and Americans are rallying around his campaign. Well, evidently, that spokesman has not seen the latest poll numbers where Joe Biden is quite a few points ahead of Donald Trump. The story goes on and says, Flynn, who famously invoked the Fifth Amendment when asked by the January 6th committee whether violence at the insurrection was justified, is unfit for public service, and no one should ever place him in a position of trust again, according to Schaub. I'm surprised Clark is even still allowed to be a lawyer, much less a public servant. end quote. The moves are part of Trump's professed inclination to make his theoretical second term something of a revenge tour to revive the people and policies that even some members of his own party deemed too extreme. Over the past year, Trump has mulled intensifying his first term's historic federal killing spree with group executions, gallows, and firing squads, invading Mexico, and bringing back an expanded version of his Muslim ban. Now, that to me just seems crazy. In fact, I have a story we're going to get to probably in the next hour about how so many people have been wrongly convicted over the years of all kinds of things, including murder, and that a number of them have been able to get out of jail. I think it's over 200 now, that after wrongly being convicted. So we know that there are people in jail who did not commit crimes. They have been wrongly convicted, and yet Trump wants to bring back his federal killing spree with group executions. Now, how would they do that? Line people up against a wall? Just have a firing squad go at them? That's what it says here. Group executions, gallows, and firing squads. The story from Rolling Stone goes on and says he's also doubling down on his attacks on the democratic system, right? We know that many Republicans, including Trump, don't like democracy. The story goes on and says, ever since the violent end of Trump's presidency, the former president sought to turn his baseless propaganda about widespread election fraud into Republican Party dogma. In many cases, Trump has already succeeded, accelerating the right's past crusades against voting rights. The fact that Trump is giving serious thought to bringing back figures such as Clark and Flynn also highlights how much Trump remains fixated on his lies about the 2020 presidential election, which led to the deadly January 6th Capitol riot, and how unlikely he is to move on if he gets another shot at running the country. Clark, in particular, embodies that instinct. The former assistant attorney general from the Justice Department's environmental division allegedly sprung into action in the wake of the 2020 election with ideas on how Trump and his administration could undermine it. In particular, he pushed Justice Department leaders to send a letter to the Georgia legislature claiming that the department had discovered, quote, significant fraud, and urged it to create alternate slates of electors. The effort, stopped by senior Justice Department leaders, would have effectively endorsed bogus conspiracy theories about election fraud and given an air of official legitimacy to efforts to overturn the election. Clark's devotion to the cause of Trump's election almost landed him one of the most senior jobs in the former president's first administration. Trump unsuccessfully tried to make Clark his new attorney general in the final weeks of his presidency. Today, Clark is a senior fellow at the Center for Renewing America, an increasingly influential Trump-aligned think tank. Yeah. Yeah, yes. Everybody stick around. Going to take a news break, top of the hour break. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show on your local Civic Media radio station. Get it.